This is Great Falls rodeo poet Paul Zarziski, reminding you that in my free verse book of jumping kickers, rockin' rowlers, rodeo rhymes with radio, and rodeo radio rhymes with KGPR, a station that never fails to pitch its listeners to the 8-second welcome whistle, or better yet, the 8-hour welcome whistle. So tune the stirrup bones of your middle ears to KGPR. Shake your faces for the shoot gate 7 days a week. Spur the radio waves wild out across the old cowpoke cosmos. And win yourselves a silver buckle prize for twisting the best bronco in the herd. This is Paul Zarziski, cheering you on from behind the chutes. Take that extra tuck and let the KGPR programming buck.
On today's program, Christy Scott, Executive Director of the History Museum, Thomas Risberg with Alliance for Youth and a Sober Life, Paul Skinner inviting you to Robert Burns Night at the Celtic Cowboy. Welcome to Voices and Views. This is Voices and Views, and I have in the studio with me Christy Scott, Executive Director of the History Museum. Good afternoon, Christy.
Hi, Tom.
From what I understand, you have a very, very special event coming up. Why don't you tell us all about it, please?
We do. On Saturday, February 1st, we are celebrating a night of sweets and swing in the Ozark Club at the History Museum.
And what makes it so special?
Well, the Ozark Club itself is a really incredible venue. If you haven't had a chance to spend some time in there, it's an awesome spot to get your celebration on. But really, it's bringing back Bud Nichols and his big band.
And the event starts at what time?
It starts at 6 o'clock and it finishes around 9 p.m. But, you know, the last event we did was 6 to 9 also, and the Latin jazz band was so much fun that we were all dancing till 10 p.m. So as long as the horns and trumpets are playing and the people's feet are moving, we'll keep going.
Uh-huh. And this kind of sounds like it's maybe not so themed for Valentine's Day, or is it?
It is a bit, because it's sweets and swing. First of all, there's the swing dancing. I don't know how to swing dance. I still plan on going out there and dancing. You know, there's something about trumpets and trombones that just make you want to move. But then we also are doing this really decadent array of desserts. This is all included in the ticket price. So we have a big chocolate fountain with all kinds of deliciousness to dip into that chocolate. And then beautiful cakes and confections and donuts. It's going to be like the whole array of sweets that you'll get a snack on. And then, of course, there's the cash bar, so you can get yourself a glass of wine or a local microbrew and snack and dance and have fun.
And I imagine there's tables and things like that to sit at, or is it just one big open dance room, or how does that work?
So we have a stage and a dance floor, and then there's tables that anyone can sit at. But if you want to reserve one of the tables up front, we have those tables of six. The rest of the tables are tables of eight. So when you reserve your own table, you actually get more space. It comes with a bottle of wine, and it's just, you're right up front then, mm-hmm. and it's reserved. You don't have to go there and search out a seat. Everyone else just buys a ticket, and there's room to dance, and you can join other folks at the tables of eight.
And the Bud Nichols big band kind of insinuates they're playing kind of jazz music, or what?
Yeah, and it's so exciting. It's a lot of local musicians, because a big band, of course, is just what it sounds like. There's five saxophones, four trombones, four trumpets, percussion, and a lot of folks, if you know musicians in the community, they're part of this band that is going to be playing. And then, of course, Bud has this history in Great Falls. He owns a music store. He taught as in the school district for a long time, and then his father before him was also a musician.
Yeah, he's kind of a mainstay or a big deal in Great Falls, Montana.
He is.
He's such a nice guy, so talented. He lends his talents to the community. I also understand he plays at the band shell Gibson Park in the summer.
Yeah, those community concerts.
He's always doing something. Now, back to the event, it sounds like a lot of chocolate. <laughs> It's sweets.
It is, but we're also going to be sure to have, you know, there'll be some eclairs, so they'll have some whipped cream involved. We want to make sure there's something for everyone. And we've worked hard to keep the price low. You know, a lot of these events in the community are $50, $60, $75. Ours is $30 for members, $35 for non-members. And I guarantee you we'll get full on sweets and have a good time dancing.
And it sounds like just great for dates. You know, to bring a date.
Yeah, get ready for Valentine's Day for sure. And, you know, our last event sold out, so there were no tickets available the days before the event. So I'm just encouraging people who are interested in attending to call and reserve your ticket at the museum or stop in and see us.
And are you making all the sweets yourself or what?
No, we're working with different businesses locally to make it happen.
Okay.
And this is a fundraiser for the History Museum, which of course is actually the Cascade County Historical Society. And we are the repository for the county's archives. And it takes a lot of resources to keep this neat building going and to protect these resources for current and future generations. And fundraisers like this help us do just that.
And the inside's been all renovated. I understand Philip Auber kind of had a hand in this, is making it as acoustical friendly for music as possible. And
yes.
It sounds really nice in there. I've been in there myself.
For sure. And then we have this 1925 Chickering piano that he helped pick out for us that's been restored. So it is, the ambiance in this venue is different than any place in Great Falls.
And again, how about recapping the event for us?
So Sweets and Swing at the Ozark Club in the History Museum, which is located at 422 2nd Street South. That's right there on Machinery Row. This is happening Saturday, February 1st from 6 p.m. to 9. And if you have questions, call us at the History Museum, 452-3462, or you can look us up on the web.
Yes, I encourage you to check out the Facebook page. Not only is it filled with information on Sweets and Swing, it also has some really neat pictures of just old-time Great Falls or Cascade County, I noticed, going on there. You have pictures going back to 1921, and if you're a history buff, this is something you might want to check out.
For sure. Yeah, we have over 70,000 photographs in our archives and hundreds of thousands of documents and a big museum collection. So what we are truly is a research center, but we also offer exhibitions, and we're free and open to the public.
And really quick, how about those second Saturdays? What's that all about?
We're still doing that, and we're going to continue that throughout the year. So the second Saturday of the month, you can come in to the museum and check it out for free. We're open from noon to 5 on those days.
Christy Scott, Executive Director with the History Museum. Thank you for being here on Voices and Views. Good afternoon and welcome back to Voices and Views. My name is Tom Halverson, and with me in the studio today, I have Bob Swirsky, and he's here to talk about the sober life and maybe the Bears.
The Bears. I love it. Thank you so much for having me on, Tom. I say we're good Flatlanders out here in Montana, and he's a Cubs fan, but I forgive him for that, and we always know that stands for completely useless by September.
How many miniature Ditkas does it take to beat the St. Louis Cardinals? 3. One pitching, one catching, and one to escort them back into the dugout. So, all right.
That's a classic.
Welcome to Voices and Views. My name's Tom Halverson. And seriously, with me in the studio today, I have Thomas Risberg. He is the development director at Alliance for Youth, and also he manages the Sober Life Program. Good afternoon, Thomas.
Good afternoon, Tom. Thank you so much for having me.
And thanks for being here. How about starting out with a short, maybe, overview of your organization, please?
So the Alliance for Youth has been providing prevention, primarily work around substance abuse, mental health, suicide, to the youth in Great Falls for more than 30 years. And we have a lot of exciting programs. The sober life is a big part of what I do. And, you know, hopefully you'll also be able to have our executive director, who is just an incredible woman, Christy Ponte Stroop, can come on and tell you about the Youth Resource Center, which we're going to be getting going in the next few weeks for homeless children in the Great Falls area. And it's just some spectacular things going on there. But the sober life is really doing a lot in the community and helping folks, you know, really get connections that are in recovery from drugs and alcohol.
Well, obviously you saw a need for this. What kind of problems are we talking about? 30 years is a long time to be in an organization. And I'm thinking the problems we were experiencing back then are probably the same type of problems we're experiencing now.
Well, what I say never changes is alcohol, right? And alcohol really is the forgotten killer. If you look at statistics around emergency room visits, right? And then you look at on the tail end, you look at your kidney problems, your heart problems, your liver problems, your pancreas issues. None of those death certificates say alcohol, right? But we all know that a strong causal factor in early death is oftentimes alcohol. And then the real scourge that we've seen recently in Great Falls is meth, right? And methamphetamines are readily available and cheap and very detrimental to everything that you hold dear in your life, to your family and your friends and, you know, having a job and being a stable contributing member of society. And the sober life, we really want to change the equation for people that decide, you know what, I've had enough pain. I've had enough, and I want to live a different life. People come to us and they're alone. They're bored. They're depressed. And they equate sobriety in some cases with boredom. And it's in fact exactly the opposite. Is your life and your horizons open up so much more once you take out the chemicals. And so that's what the sober life has been, is to give people connection and just to have fun.
Have you heard of the term functioning alcoholic?
Absolutely. And so I always say that's kind of an oxymoron. I call that a person that goes to work and has a home, right? That's typically what that means. Now, if you look at a person, every other aspect of their life, right? Their relationships are typically in shambles. You know, their health is in shambles. And so functioning, when I hear that term, I say, well, that depends on your definition of functioning. And if you mean that you're alive and breathing and that you're able to get out of bed most days, you know, with a terrible hangover and feeling like, you know, crud all day, then yeah, I guess they are functioning. My advice to anyone listening, you know, is you don't have to be near death to decide that you want to make a change. And, you know, if all you want out of life is just to barely scrape by, I guess that's functioning in some people's books, but there is a better life, and I encourage you to reach out to the sober life.
Now, it's just not alcohol, it's drugs too. Who might be the typical, I want to say user? Does it stretch across, you know, the economy lines or the rich and poor? You want to comment on that, please?
Absolutely. So I think this is probably one of the biggest misperceptions that we have as a society. Generally, it is thought that alcohol and drug use is primarily concentrated amongst those in poverty. And the statistics simply show that that's not true. It is an equal opportunity destroyer. That's what I say. And really, the reason that we all have these misconceptions is the drug use in the wealthier communities is hidden, right? These are not your people that are sitting on the corner. They're not doing their drug deals on the corner, you know, out on the street. They're the folks that, you know, they are going to jobs. They're doctors, they're lawyers, they're teachers, they're electricians. And they're getting their drugs delivered to their houses, right? Or they're just going to the store and buying alcohol. And they're really good at covering it up. The facade is the whole key to being able to, quote unquote, maintain, right? You cannot let anyone know that you have all this shame and this guilt and this fear. And so you put all this effort into becoming a hollowed out facade that has nothing behind it. But so I really, you know, the community needs to know that this is not something where, oh, that's the other side of the tracks, right? That's not a problem here. I mean, I'll hear, well, you know, those are folks that are different, right? I mean, where I live, we're all, you know, good, upstanding people. And look, I get there's people want to other it. They want to say it's not mine because it relieves them of any kind of responsibility to address it. And I think it's a community issue. It's a statewide issue. And truly, it's a national issue. And if you look at those overdose numbers, there's no way to hide from that, right, when there are. And this is a lot of opiates is the biggest immediate killer in overdose, right? I mean, you're looking at 70,000 drug overdose deaths last year. It's amazing. It's a city larger than Great Falls every year wiped out by drugs.
And it's just not illegal drugs. I think your organization probably has a tougher time because now it's, like you just said, opiates and prescription drugs.
The prescriptions are a major issue. There's been some progress on that. You know, there is a prescription database, so it's harder to doctor shop, to go to different doctors and get, you know, 8 prescriptions for opioids in a 1 month. There are also a lot of synthetic drugs that are coming on that are very dangerous and unregulated is the real issue with that. Some of it is coming over from foreign countries, in particular China, and you can buy it off of the dark web and have it delivered to your house. And then we also see they, you know, are euphemistically called supplements, things like kratom, which has opiate-like effects and has similar, really terrible, you know, detox of coming off of it. So those are absolutely a problem. And then the classic is it's getting pills from mom, right? You had the surgery and there's 15 Vicodin left over, right? Or there's Oxys left over. And the vast majority of kids that get started start getting them from family and friends. And whether they give them, hey, oh, you got a knee ache, here's something that'll make you feel better, or they just go shop through their medicine cabinet.
And another issue is returning vets with PTSD, coming back feeling isolated, not wanted, not loved. Can you touch on that for a moment?
Absolutely. So, and I can say we work a lot with the Veterans Treatment Court here in Great Falls, and they are spectacular people. I was just this week at 10 vets were graduating from the Veterans Treatment Court, and the things that Judge Pinsky and his staff have done there are really a model nationally, and it is heartwarming. I highly encourage, you know, if anyone has time to go to see one of those ceremonies, they are very poignant, and you just see, you know, these are folks that, you know, literally they paid a huge debt. You know, we owe them a debt, and to see them finally kind of getting the care they need is really heartwarming. And I think the veterans touch on a good point that is universal but particularly relevant in the veteran context, is that alcohol and drugs start out as the solution, right? And especially you come back and you have this trauma and you don't want to feel and you can't face it, and you believe that if you show weakness and you talk about it, right, that makes you somehow broken. It's stigmatized. And so you escape through drugs and alcohol, and they turn on you, right? And that is inevitable. I don't care who you are, how tough you are, you know, eventually drugs and alcohol will take you down. And so what you really need in the veteran context, right, is vet to vet, that there is nothing like being able to talk about it with someone who's been through something like it, and then to reach out and to access those resources, right? There's counseling and, you know, lots of activities available. We have lots of people in Veterans Treatment Court that come play basketball with us, that come play volleyball with us and do all of our activities. So it's an issue, and I think we as a community and as a country owe it to our vets to make sure that we do everything humanly possible so that they are able to process the trauma that they've endured and are able to thrive.
Judge Pinsky has done a wonderful job with that program. And I have to just comment, because One of the volunteers here at KGPR, Roger McConnell, actually approached Judge Pinsky over 10 years ago with this idea, and he was responsible for getting this going in Cascade County. Unfortunately, he passed on, but another volunteer from KGPR stepped up, Joe Parsettage, and he actually is On Point Veterans Talk Radio, the host of it, but he's heavily involved. He's the white-haired gentleman in the room, and when Joe's in the room, you know Joe's in the room, and his heart is really into this. I mean, he mentors at least three, more than three volunteers. Go ahead, Tom. I can tell.
He's a pillar of the community, so I know he's heavily involved also with the suicide prevention efforts in Great Falls, and you know he was at the graduation, and I think he probably mentored, you know, three or four of the graduates, right? So that tells you he mentors many more if you know three or four of his folks were graduating at one time. And you know, I just can't say enough. He's emblematic of a service orientation, right? And for his entire life, and it's folks like him in Great Falls, you know, that we're all lucky to have as part of the community.
You know, and you made a good point about, you know, vets helping vets in this this recovery, you know, so they've been there. They kind of know what it's like. Now, that's kind of like your organization, too, because you help people in recovery by using people that have recovered. Is that true?
Absolutely. So there's simply no substitute for experience, really, in anything in life. And the sober life, I like to say there's three ways of how we do things and then three things of what we do. And how we do it is that it is run by people in recovery, for people in recovery. And everything that we do is free and it's family friendly. And they say, you know, the family gets sick together. Addiction is a family disease. And so we want to give folks the opportunity in everything that we do to bring their kids and so everyone can recover together. And then in terms of the what we do, there are my two watchwords are always connection and agency, right? We want folks to feel that they are a part of, not apart from, and we want them to understand and know and practice that they are not a burden to be managed, as we often are treated, folks that have struggled with alcoholism addiction, but we're underutilized assets, right? And if you invest in folks in recovery, you're going to get an incredible return, and that these folks are out in our community every day doing a lot of wonderful things. And so the things that we provide for folks in recovery are weekly fitness. So we have volleyball on Monday. We have basketball on Friday. We do breath works and moving meditation on Thursday. And then we do Tai Chi also on Friday and lacrosse on Saturdays. And all of that information about the times and places for those can be found on our Facebook page. Just search The Sober Life, and it's all there. And if you give us, you know, your email address and your phone number, we'll send text message and email updates. So we do the fitness is one component. The second component is all of our events throughout the year. So, for instance, we just recently went to the escape rooms. And just in the last month, we had a cookie decorating and ornament painting party. We've been bowling. We've been to the water park in the last year, go to a baseball game, go to a hockey game, brush crazy, a whole ton of great stuff where you just get together and it feels good to be with people and to know you don't need drugs and alcohol to have a great time. And the third thing we do is then volunteer, right? A big part of being in recovery is getting away from that kind of self-centeredness that we all have, but is particularly toxic for folks in recovery, and getting out and giving back. And so we organize volunteer events. So recently at the Youth Resource Center, we had 30 plus Sober Life volunteers in there in the month of November, December, and January, and you know, donated more than 300 hours of their time. So a really great effort that we've seen and we will continue to do to show that we're a contributor to the community.
Well, it's nice that you just don't concentrate on the mental aspect of this. It's also a physical aspect.
And addiction really is, you know, it is a mental, a physical, a social, and a spiritual disease. And we want to treat all the components of it. And I have to reference this because I think it would help people in the public that haven't really struggled with addiction or had it in their family. Is when you think about someone that is addicted to drugs, right? That is the most important relationship in their life. And I say that this is the way to think of it, is they're married to that, right? And the way that you think of how you would get if you think you're going to be away from your spouse or your child, that's relationally what drugs are like for that person or alcohol is like for that person. And then to boot, it really messes with the brain chemistry. And so literally, your body is telling you, if I don't get this alcohol or get this opiate or this meth, you know, I'm going to die, right? And in fact, it's killing you, and that's some of the great irony. But I think it helps folks to understand, because a lot of the things that people do in their addiction seems to be irrational, right? And I think a way you can kind of see through the clutter is if you see it that way, right? That they're married to it and they're really bound to it in a way that's deep and profound. And the way that people are able to get off, and more importantly, to stay sober, is to fill that void, that relational void, with healthy people, with healthy activities. And again, that's what we're trying to do with the Sober Life.
Well, you just kind of brought up another good point. Why don't you talk about the support group? You know, that these guys come into this organization, but there's a huge support group to make sure they succeed. Is that correct?
Absolutely. And so, again, it is the peer-to-peer is the key. And really what we want to serve as a catalyst for people to meet and then organically go out and strengthen these bonds and develop. I call crews, right? There's like crews in the Sober Life, people that get to know each other. And it's beautiful to see because, you know, they're going to their kids' birthday parties. They're hanging out every Friday night. And then, you know, we still come together and do stuff as a group in the Sober Life. But these are now folks that are their best friends, right? These are people they hang out with. And that really is why the Sober Life is needed, is that drugs and alcohol and addiction are kryptonite to connection, right? I mean, they destroy everything. And so things that normally you would have just through kind of the life you've been embedded in, through, you know, your church and your school and your job and your community and your family, those things are mostly gone. And so that really is what the Sober Life is about, is providing a structure for people to come in. But the Sober Life members themselves really do build the organization. They're the whole deal, right? They're the folks that are saying, hey, let's get this started. And then they're raising their hand and saying, you know what? I'll take that on. You know, I'll be at the gym and I'll open it up. And I'll, you know, we've got this woodworking event coming up on February 15th. And there's a gentleman who's just been incredibly helpful to the organization since our inception. You know, he's going out getting fine hardwoods, right, and bringing these in with saws, and he's working with local businesses to get kits. And I do want to say, you know, I'd be remiss that the Great Falls community has been extraordinarily generous. You know, the Alliance for Youth, the Substance Abuse Prevention Alliance, the Indian Family Health Clinic, the United Way of Cascade County has been an extraordinary partner, and I can say, you know, kind of but for their support, this would not have come to fruition. And then there's too many to list, but the outpouring of support and the love and understanding that we've received from this community is just been very humbling and gratifying to see.
I can tell you from experience that volunteering really makes you feel good. It really does. When you go out there and help someone else that's in need, you know, regardless of your problems and your place in life, it's just a really good feeling. And that's kind of leads to what you were maybe insinuating a little bit. It builds up your confidence, so you raise your hand. You want to get involved, that type of thing.
Absolutely. The old adage that, you know, when you give, you know, you get more back. It is true. And, you know, I love about this community is that you see that every day. And I think we need to be proud of that as a community, because it is not something, you know, I'm a flatlander, as we said, you know, at the beginning. And I've lived, you know, around the country. I lived in Washington, D.C. and in Memphis and Western Massachusetts. I never lived in any place like this. I've been out here since 2017. And I think we just need to recommit as a community that, you know, this is a place that's known for, it's not just a name, oh, a community. No, like it represents a web of support and caring, loving people that come together to make Great Falls the wonderful place that it is.
Now, personally, how do you feel when you see someone that comes in and they're not doing so well, but you've actually helped turn their lives around? That's got to be a good feeling for you.
It absolutely is gratifying. And what I say, though, is, look, we can only plant seeds and we water them. Or I'll say that, you know, you can lead a horse to water and you can make it thirsty, but you can't make it drink. And so that's what we try to do, right, is we try to create a, you know, healthy environment. But at the end of the day, you know, I'll tell folks, you know, there's nothing we can do for you if you don't want help, right? Is that you got to raise your hand and say, I've had enough. I've had enough pain. I can't do this anymore. Because I'll tell you what, the ego is a very resilient, you know, part of who we are. And people, they want to be the tough guy, right? They don't want to admit any weakness. And it's a, you know, they talk about surrender to win. And boy, has that been true in my experience. But, you know, for those listeners out there that know someone struggling, you know, it really is. It's not our job to save anyone, right? That they need to raise their hand and say, I've got a problem. And then, you know, we're here. There's a lot of organizations that want to help them. But at the end of the day, you know, we are responsible for admitting we have a problem and that we need help.
They need to help themselves.
Absolutely.
It's a fine line, or maybe not so fine line, of not being able to function when you're using alcohol or meth especially, well, alcohol too. But, you know, who makes that? Who defines that?
So we say you are the only person who can say whether or not you are an alcoholic or a drug addict. Now, what I'll tell people who are wavering is I'll say it's a lot better if you go through life sober thinking you're an alcoholic than if you go through life drinking trying to prove you're not. And so, you know, what are the side effects of, you know, of stopping, right? I mean, you have more energy, you feel great, your friends and loved ones aren't angry at you all the time, right? I mean, it's not really a lot of downside to getting into recovery.
Well, how long have you been in Montana now?
So I moved out here in July of 2017.
Okay. I'm just kind of wondering, you know, what's your skin in the game? Why is this so personal to you? Do you have a personal story or to share?
Absolutely. So I have it both in my, you know, I'm an alcoholic myself, and my brother had profound mental health issues when I was growing up and was a very violent child and man. And both of my grandparents, right, both my grandmothers were alcoholics. I never met one of them. She died in the 70s, a heart attack. That was my dad's mom. And you know, uncles and aunts had a lot of addiction and suicide and mental health issues. So I'm very familiar with it. I was, you know, telling you when you got here, it's actually my brother passed away in 2017, and today's the 3-year anniversary of his death. And, you know, again, it was in a car accident, but, you know, we think that he, you know, passed out at the wheel and he was on the way into to St. Louis to buy heroin. And, you know, for me, it was a slow descent, right? I had the ego and I thought that I could do it on my own, right? And that this time will be different. And so I can remember, I'm a lawyer by training. And, so, you know, kind of had the classic, you know, you go to college. I went down and taught, fifth grade in Memphis, Tennessee, as part of Teach for America, went on to law school. And, I was clerking for a judge in Missouri. And that's the first time that I really had to control my drinking. I had to think, you know, nah, you shouldn't be getting drunk on a Tuesday night. That's not what we do. and I can only see this in retrospect, but at that point, kind of the gig was up, right? The thing I say is, if I was in control, I wasn't having fun, and if I was having fun, I wasn't in control. And so over the course of basically 5 years, and the really kind of they talk about hitting rock bottom, I hit that, you know, I guess after soon after my brother died. And but prior to that, you know, I'd been to treatment, and I was barely functioning, right? I mean, I had a job and everything. My life was miserable. My life was out of control. And I could not admit that I couldn't control alcohol. And that was my whole problem. And it was, at root, it's an ego issue, right? I didn't have the humility to raise my hand and say that I need help. And I had to get beaten into a point of reasonableness. And finally, you know, with the help of God and a lot of wonderful people, I've been sober since August 22nd, 2017, and I'm grateful for every day that I have, you know, living this wonderful life in recovery.
Can I ask you to share, I mean, how bad did it get? Were you drinking like a 12-pack a night? Did you go out to bars, or did you sit at home and drink, or...?
I was a very solitary drinker, and I was more of the binging type, so... When I would be on a binge, I could cheap whiskey was kind of my poison, and you know, I could go through a 175 of whiskey a day, and typically I would drink until my body literally, you know, I'd be thrown up, and I in many cases could not handle my stomach, at least couldn't handle the alcohol. And so in that last year of drinking was really different than any of the prior time. And, yeah, I ended up going to the hospital, 5 times that year for, you know, for acute alcohol detox and had, you know, profound the shakes and really, it was really scary stuff. And in retrospect, you know, that's where, you get to a point where, you know, you've drank yourself out of your family and your friends and, you know, I had that woe is me mentality. I had that, you know, they say pour me another drink. And I didn't want to face that I was the problem. And now I love today, you know, if I'm not the problem, there is no solution. And boy, the things that I've learned in talking with people in recovery have made a profound difference in my life. And I'm grateful. So
you must have recognized this over a period of time. It wasn't one real bad incident that made you throw up your hand and say, I'm done with this.
Well, I was a slow learner. That's what I say. There were many potential epiphany experiences. And I prior to, you know, getting sober in August of 2017, I had up to 6 months. And I would definitely say I was dry, right? I was an angry person. I was not in recovery. I kept all of my resentment and self-pity and fear and shame inside. And I will say, you know, part of what drove, you know, I did suffer abuse as a child and, you know, both sexual and physical. And, I still, you know, I've processed it a lot and I highly encourage people to get counseling, and to really kind of work through it, but it can give you some pretty raw core beliefs about the world and, what humanity is like. And what I say to people is, regardless of what happened to you, practically for you in your life, none of those things are going to change. And you can live a happy life, but there's a lot of work that's going to go into it. And you're going to have to do that work and you're going to have to take action. You're going to have to get to the bottom of those emotions and all those skeletons that you don't want to touch in the closet. And I think it is important to know that, you know, the things that happen to us, right, they can be learning experiences. And I never would have seen any of this in that light, you know, even a few years ago. But it really is life's, you know, it's what happens to you and what you do with what happens mm-hmm. to you.
Now, did you feel like you were following in your brother's footsteps, or did you learn anything from that?
So what I can say about kind of my choice of poison is that my brother had been a heroin and opiate user for a long time before I had really gotten deep down into alcohol. So seeing him come before me, I didn't experiment much, right? I didn't use any pharmaceuticals. I never used opiates. I never used meth. I was pretty much whiskey and, you know, maybe a joint here and there, you know, and smoke some pot. But at the end of the day, look, they're all kind of the same. I mean, that's what I found out is, you know, you'll hear people say, just alcohol, right? Just a little pot. And look, at the end of the day, the problem is that you can't cope with life on life's terms, and you need a substance to allow you to be okay with yourself in the world. And long term, that's going to take you to really dark places.
You're listening to Voices and Views on your local public radio station, 89.9 FM, KGPR, Great Falls. My name is Tom Halverson, and I have the pleasure of having Thomas Risberg with me. He is the development director at Alliance for Youth, and he also manages the Sober Life program. Now, Thomas, I understand you have a lot of events coming up.
Absolutely. I'd love to tell you about our upcoming events. So we have weekly, we do volleyball every Monday at 7 p.m. at Solid Rock Bible Church. And also at Solid Rock Bible Church, we do basketball at 6 p.m. on Fridays. And then we do lacrosse at 1 p.m. on Saturdays. And then at the Indian Family Health Clinic, we do breath works and moving meditation at 12 p.m. on Thursdays. And also there at the Indian Family Health Clinic is Tai Chi, and that's from 4:45 to 5:45 on Friday evenings. And then the registration is actually closed for this next event, but I want to give a shout-out to Gateway Community Services. They are an incredible partner, and they're doing a Narcan training for us. For those of you not familiar with Narcan, it is also known as naloxone, and it will bring people back from an opiate overdose. It has saved thousands of lives, and we are very grateful to Gateway for facilitating that training, and then to the state of Montana, who is providing Narcan to people free of charge as long as they complete this training. And after the Narcan, we will have at the Peak West Bank Landing. And again, I want to thank Benefis for all of their support. And that will be a great event. It's the kickoff Get Fit for Spring. And that's February 1st at 1 p.m. again at the Peak West Bank Landing. And then coming up on February 15th, we have a woodworking event we talked about earlier, where we'll have a couple master carpenters at the Alliance for Youth building there at 3220 11th Avenue South. And that will be at 2 p.m. on February 15th. So you can come there and make just some really incredible crafts. They'll help you design and cut things to your specific specifications. And then finally, we are very blessed to have the United Way helping us out with a financial literacy course. It's a six-week course that will be every Tuesday starting February 18th at 5:30 p.m. And that's, again, going to be at the Alliance for Youth. And so, really, they will teach you everything that you need to know about budgeting and how to invest in ways that make sense and to save on taxes and fees. Really, just having this limited understanding can save you thousands of dollars a year and set you on a course for financial security and stability. Make sure to go to our Facebook page, which is, again, The Sober Life, and we have all of this detailed, and you give us your phone number and email address, and we will get you on our mailing list, and so you can hear about all the wonderful things we're doing the rest of the year.
Do you guys look for volunteers for your organization?
Absolutely. No, if you're interested in volunteering, you can reach out to me, and my email address is T Risberg, that's R-I-S as in Sam, B as in boy, E-R-G, at allianceforyouth.org. Or you can call or text me, and my cell number is 406-590-7114. We need lots of folks to help us, you know, prepare food, get these events ready. So we'd love to have you come out, love your support. And, you know, we'd also love financial support, right? We are a all-volunteer organization, and we get by. We leverage the money that we have to really provide a lot of great programs and a lot of in-kind support from the businesses in Great Falls. But love to have you come out and volunteer.
I've been to your church, and I noticed that you're kind of in the middle of renovations. Are you looking for items or any help with that?
Absolutely. So you can go on the Alliance for Youth website, which is allianceforyouth.org, and that will have a whole list of things that we need donated for the Youth Resource Center. And that is anything from new clothing to hygiene products to food. And then we are also in need of financial donations, and as well as in kind, right? If you know a plumber or an electrician, people, you know, that can lay carpet, we'll be doing updates for the foreseeable future. And absolutely reach out to us, and we'll get you to work.
And if someone might want to put a check in the mail, who would they mail that to?
You can mail it to the Alliance for Youth, and that is at P.O. Box 2982, Great Falls, Montana, area code 59403.
I'm sorry, I was writing that down. What P.O. Box was that?
The P.O. Box 2982.
And how about some final thoughts?
I just want to express gratitude to the Great Falls community for your support of the Sober Life and Alliance for Youth and all our community partners and the individuals in recovery. And I want to say to the person that's out there drinking and using and think that there's not a way out, just know that you are never alone. There are people that love you and want to help you, but you've got to reach out your hand and ask. And so I just say, don't wait another day, right? You never know when it's going to be your time. And so act now and get help. And I hope to see you in recovery. It's a beautiful life.
Thomas Risberg, Development Director at Alliance for Youth and Manager of the Sober Life Program. Thank you for being here on Voices and Views.
Thank you so much for having me, Tom.
This is Voices and Views. My name is Tom Halverson, and with me in the studio today, I have Paul Skinner. Paul is a member of the Golden Triangle Celts. Good afternoon, Paul.
Good afternoon, Tom. Pleasure to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you here. I've always wanted to know about this event. It sounds so exciting, and I know you've done this a number of years, but the Robert Burns Night. Do you want to talk about it, please?
Yeah, certainly. Golden Triangle Celts, along with the Celtic Cowboy, has hosted a Robert Burns Night Supper for the last 5 years here in Great Falls. And actually, this has been celebrated in Great Falls in some way, shape, or form since 1891.
Wow. And who is Mr. Robert Burns?
Mr. Robert Burns is basically the poet laureate of Scotland. His poetry was about the common man and living the common life, close, you know, salt of the earth kind of thing. So the Scots adopted him, and he is also known for writing Auld Lang Syne, which we sing at New Year's.
Now, I understand your event is Saturday, January 25th at 7 p.m. at the Celtic Cowboy, located at 116 First Avenue South, Great Falls, Montana. Now, why don't you kind of set up the evening for us? What should people expect?
Lots of Scottish shenanigans. Our event, we run it in a less formal manner. We tend to be more about getting down with the blue collar, working class, try to keep it lighthearted and fun. When we begin, we usually begin with a presentation of the colors and a march of the presenters. And that's usually will be bagpiped in. And yes, there will be full on Highland Scottish bagpipes provided by my friend Tim Stoddard, who is also a member of the group. We will talk about how the order of events will take place. We begin with the Selkirk Grace, which was written by Robert Burns. Then we will have the haggis paraded in and bagpiped into the dining area. There is the Ode to a Haggis written by Burns that we read to this particular dish. And then we continue on through the evening with poetry, jokes, music. We also have something known as the Toast to the Lassies and the Reply to the Toast to the Lassies. That can also be a little blue, depending on how we do it. But it's very much a very fun time. Mm-hmm. And then we end with a chorus of Auld Lang Syne to finish off the evening.
So it sounds like you want a little bit of audience participation.
We would like some audience participation. Right now we have myself, Pam Stoddard, Tim's wife, Tim himself, and another individual to read poetry. So we could certainly use some people with some skill in that department.
Now, I've seen you before in your Scottish attire. You guys going to be all decked out?
Oh, yeah. We will definitely be dressed up to the full nine yards, so to speak. Yeah, we will be dressed more formally for the event, just so we can stand out and let people know what we're doing. And I'd like to make it clear that this event will be carrying on from 7 until 11. People should be aware it is an all-night thing, not just for an hour.
And is it kid-friendly?
Very kid-friendly.
Okay. And I've noticed Scottish fiddle music. Do you perform Scottish fiddle music, or who does that?
Well, right now we are going to have the Rare Old Times, which is the house band. So Richard Bird Baker, Lonnie Baker, and Diane Stringer will be there.
Wow. That's actually some pretty good musicians.
Yeah, should be pretty good. Should be pretty good. Tim will be there with his full Highland pipes. I am the MC for the event, so I'll sort of be running the show and setting the pace. Mm-hmm. I've been doing that for the last 5 years.
And the poetry reading, who's reading the poetry and what type of poetry?
It'll all be poems primarily by Robert Burns. One thing that I'm looking at including this year will be quotes from Norman MacLean, who authored A River Runs Through It, and try to find a quote of some significance from Ivan Doig, author of This House of Sky, who also wrote about this area. And both of these gentlemen have ties to the Scottish Highlands.
I was going to ask you, what's the correlation between those two and Robert Burns, I guess?
Scottish influenced writers. Like I said, Robert Burns, obviously Scottish. Norman MacLean descended from a Highland clan, the MacLeans. His father was a Presbyterian minister. And Ivan Doig, raised in White Sulphur Springs, also tied to Scotland as well.
Well, it's too bad they can't be there.
Yeah. We'll do our best.
And I understand Miss Linda's being a part of this.
Yes, they performed a demonstration of Scottish ceilidh dance or party dancing last year. They were a big hit. The audience really loved seeing the kids perform that traditional dance for us. So we're looking forward to having them again this year.
You know, Miss Linda does a phenomenal job with those kids. Been doing it for years, school of dance. So that should be interesting. Do they dress up too? Or?
Yeah, they do. They will put on some like white dresses with some tartan sash, and if there's a wee lad, he will probably have a kilt on as well.
A wee lad,
yes.
I'm thinking that's a little guy.
Yeah, wee lads, wee lassies, little guys, little girls.
You guys go all out and talk the talk and walk the walk, sounds like.
Oh, occasionally we'll try that. I mean, if we're telling, you know, a Scottish joke, although there might be a wee bit of a Scots accent.
And, of course, haggis.
Yes, there will be actual, honest haggis at this event. And for those of you who don't know, that is basically sheep guts.
Wow.
Chopped up, cooked in a sheep stomach, and paraded out. Our donation, we received that from Lisa Schmidt, who does the Letters from a Land of Grass program here. She's donated the sheep ingredients for the last 5 years. And most people, I don't know how aware of this they are, but it was originally the Graham Ranch, which was a third, fourth generation Scottish ranch. The folks who founded it were from Scotland. So we found that out when we first started, and we're kind of floored at how interestingly these things were connected.
Sounds like there's a lot of Scots in Montana.
It's more than people think. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of people get excited about St. Patrick's Day in Butte, but there's a strong number of Scots in Montana.
Yeah, I'm waiting for Norwegian Day myself. So,
well, we've got the Sons of Norway here, at the State Fair.
There you go. And the proceeds help support a very special group. Why don't you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, so the Scottish Rite Speech and Language Disorders Clinic is a charitable cause that we adopted when we initially began doing these and hosting these events. We were originally known as Kilt of the Falls, and we've had some changes since then, and now are the Golden Triangle Celts, trying to be more inclusive. we've been donating money to the speech clinic, and last year they lost a significant amount of funding. But they were the hosts of our first Highland Games that we had here. So we feel indebted to them for that. And it's a good cause.
Now, why don't we go back a little bit? Do you know the history of the Celtic people, or the Scottish people, I should say? I'm sorry. You're Scottish,
yes.
Obviously. So where are they from? What were they known for? Pillaging and plundering, that type of thing?
No, I think that's you. You were the Norwegians who came in and were interrupting our peaceful life.
Sorry about that.
The Scots are a group of people who are related to the Celtic tribes that emigrated out of Europe, and there are seven nations that are considered Celtic. Ireland and Scotland are probably the two best well-known. Wales would be like the third, and then you have the Isle of Man, the province of Brittany in France, Galicia in Spain, and each of them have different music, different dance styles, but they're all interrelated. Mm-hmm. So you can see bagpipes in northwestern Spain, for example. So the Scots, pretty rugged, pretty strong, individualistic group of people. I mean, the Romans built a wall to keep them out of England. Hadrian's Wall.
How about some contact information if someone might want to get a hold of you?
They can contact me through my cell phone at 406-217-4354. You can look at our Facebook page, which is the Golden Triangle Celts, for more information. Also, the CelticCowboy.com has the event listed on their calendar, and you can contact someone there. I'm not sure what details they know about. Usually, this event takes care of itself, and sometimes the staff isn't even aware that we're doing this until the night before.
How about talking about your group a little bit?
So we were founded 5 years ago. My friend Tim and I met at the Celtic Cowboy, of all places, where he was working, and I happened to be wearing my kilt. This was New Year's Eve of 2013, and he was just very excited to see somebody in the same tartan. We got together, attended Celt Fest Missoula in 2014, and we were there, and we went to the games in Hamilton, which have been around for about 10 years now, and we decided, Tim said, why can't we put something like this on in Great Falls? And I said, why don't we just take the steps to do it? So we started out as Kilt of the Falls and promoted a Highland Festival. And when we were planning our first one, we were at the Celtic Cowboy, and we got on the subject of, we should try doing a Robert Burns night. And this is October. So in the space of 3 months, we somehow managed to plan this and had shoulder to shoulder, standing room only at the Celtic Cowboy. We had 250 plus people for our first one. Just completely mind blowing. So the owners of the Celtic have said that they really like what we do, and it's kind of a big event for them. So we've just been doing that for a long time. And sometimes you'll see us in like the St. Patrick's Day parade, wandering around at Christmas Stroll. We've made a couple of appearances at Parade of Lights. We've also been at the Black Eagle Volunteer Fire Department 4th of July parade.
Wow. So it's not just this one event. You guys are pretty active.
Yeah, we are fairly active.
Are you looking for volunteers?
Oh, we would love to get volunteers. We're in the process of going through another major change. And so some of the people who are involved with it are going to be moving on to Better and Brighter. So we would love to have people step up. And if they want to see this continue in Great Falls, just like anything else, we need bodies, and we need people who are willing to step up and help us out if they want to see this continue.
And how about a recap of the entire event?
Okay, so this is Robert Burns Night, or Robert Burns Night Supper, which will be at the Celtic Cowboy on January 25th, starting at 7 p.m. The Celtic Cowboy is located at 116 First Avenue South here in Great Falls.
And again, for more information, you can visit thecelticcowboy.com. or the Golden Triangle Celts Facebook page. I want to thank my guest today, Paul Skinner, member of the Golden Triangle Celts. Thank you for being here on Voices and Views.
Hello, public radio listeners. This is KGPR Great Falls 89.9. You might be listening in one of these fine Montana towns: Fort Benton, Sand Coulee, Fife, Power, Sims, DePoyer, Valier, Belt, Cascade, or Highwood. You listeners are the best.